Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Hello, good evening, happy new year, and welcome to the Movie Review Show. My name is Tosin, and I shall be your host over the next hour as we pore over what there is at the cinema to offer in this new year's, as you're getting ready, as you're going back to work. What is there to help you think, you know what, it isn't that bad going back to work at the cinemas. With me, as usual, are Sharon.
Hello.
And Sean.
Hiya.
How were your Christmases?
Yeah, it was okay. It was. I didn't really do much because, as I say, my dad getting on and a bit ill, and he went into hospital. So I didn't really do loads. No. not much in the way of celebration. But it was you know, okay. It was what it was.
Did it carry on into the new year? Was your dad still in hospital?
He was still in hospital New Year.
Is he
he's still there? Yeah,
he's still in.
Still
oh
in.
Wow.
They did try when they. I mean, he had a sort of fairly bad night, and I sat up with him, and then we called the 111, and the doctor, well, he didn't appear, I suppose, because they're so busy over this period. So phoned again after a couple of hours, and they said, "Oh, well, better send an ambulance because it got worse." They came in, bless them, they were absolutely marvellous.
Yeah,
they tried everything they could to make it, you know, if it was possible for him to stay home. They must have been there a good hour, and then they said, "Well, now we're going to have to take him in."
Yeah,
so they had to bring a special chair and everything to move him in. Apart from that, really didn't, you know,
NHS
so yeah, yeah, so I didn't really see in the new year as such.
Yeah.
I was so tired.
I can imagine.
Heard lots of fireworks though, so, but other people were enjoying it, so that's good.
Yeah, well, I was babysitting. I must admit, I did the babysitting rotor for my brother, so he went out to a 1930s night at the Key Arts Centre that they put on, and I think he had a thoroughly good evening. But I must admit, we were watching a film on the television, and then I suddenly looked up, Mum said, "I don't think I've wished you a happy new year," because we could hear all the banging and popping, and they looked at it, it was like quarter past, and we like went, "Oh, happy new year." So it was just like, you know, we missed it. But, you know, I spent most of my Christmas and New Year with my mum. My brothers are married and working and stuff. So, yeah, we had a nice, pleasant time, the two of us, just doing our thing. But, yeah, we had a nice few weeks.
All right, cool. Good stuff.
And yourself, Tosin, what did you do? Were you at Southampton for most of it?
No, I was actually on the island for New Year's. So New Year's Eve, we essentially decided to go for a curry and cows with some friends. So we went for the curries, and going to have the curry, go home, sit down for a while, then let's go back out for a run at midnight and see what the craziness happens on Cowes High Street. We saw a little bit of that. There were some people in fancy dress because I think they were going to the Cowes Yacht Haven.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know who they, but there were these group of people who essentially did the Wizard of Oz together. And the Tin Woman was awesome. She was like covered head to toe in like silver paint, had like this sort of like, you know, she had like a sort of bustier that had been made to look a bit like the Tin Man's middle, and I was just kind of like, that is amazing. They had a Dorothy, I saw a lion, I saw an Oz. They did well. They did really well.
They put the effort in.
Yeah, but then we got back to a friend's house and just watched the BBC, you know, they started doing this whole thing on BBC One where they have a concert leading
up to... Yes, and then the fireworks
and
stuff.
Then the fireworks, And they had Chic with Nile Rodgers on it, and they've had a whole set. If you can find it on BBC iPlayer, track it down, because I mean, Chic and Nile Rodgers, they're just awesome. they must be like one of the best live bands to watch.
They've been around for a while, but they're still good.
And the thing about it is, like, it's the number of hits that they've been involved in that you don't realize that they play Let's Dance with David Bowie because Nile Rodgers produced that and co-wrote that.
Right.
They played Notorious by Duran Duran because they were the major force behind that, and it was just like wall to wall funk all the way to the new year. That was good. I was like, you know, that's one concert I wouldn't have minded being in the middle of London for. Apart from that, I would say avoid the middle of London on New Year's Eve. But anyway, in this period between Christmas and New Year's, we have a whole thing where a lot of people don't... It's like the whole country kind of shuts down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for cinemas. So there isn't much new really released in the period between Christmas and New Year. And I think we had The Greatest Showman, which we spoke a little bit about last week, so we're going to go a little bit more in depth into it, because at least one other person has seen it now, so
that doubles the number of people who've seen it then.
Because The Greatest Showman, but there isn't much that has been released. I know Molly's Game was released on New Year's Day, which we're going to talk about, and we're also going to talk about a preview screening of Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Let's kick off first of all with Molly's Game. This films that you can go see. I think most of them we've already spoken about, and I think the only one we haven't spoken about is Ferdinand, which I know Sharon, you're not going to go because that's an animation. So
probably not.
Not for you. And that's going to be up for me because I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see John Cena, who I think is actually quite charismatic, voice a bull. But we're going to kick off with Molly's Game now. If you've been watching films over the last decade, the name Aaron Sorkin might mean something to you. This is the man who wrote The West Wing. He wrote The Newsroom. He wrote the script for A Few Good Men. He's been around for ages. He wrote one of your favorite films, Sean, Moneyball.
Mm-hmm. Moneyball, yeah.
Yeah, Moneyball. He wrote The Social Network. He wrote the Steve Jobs movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so yeah, when it comes to Hollywood nowadays, people look at this guy and say, this guy is the Shakespeare of modern day Hollywood. It's like, we want a good script. Aaron Sorkin.
He'll write it.
Get to Aaron Sorkin. But I think he's gone to the level where he only writes things that he's really interested in.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, because then you can, you know, you're a bit more passionate about it, aren't you? If it's something that you're going to put your...
And if you've been around that long, you don't want to just dial it in. You want to be interested in what you do.
Yeah, and I think he definitely has a liberal sensibility that he brings to everything. Anyone who's seen The West Wing, people talk about President Bartlett on The West Wing and say that, oh, you know, that was the best president America never had. Because he was just so idealistic and some would say totally unreasonable, but they love, and Aaron Sorkin has this through it. And so with this film, he's making his directorial debut. And this is Molly's Game. It's based on the story of Molly Bloom, who is a real life person, who was an Olympic level skier. She was an Olympic level skier, was fighting to get into the US team to get to the Olympics, and quit that, but she was going to go to law school. But before she went to law school, she went to LA and decided to work for a while, like as a waitress and all that kind of stuff. Ended up working for this guy who brought her into running this underground poker game, which was done in the back rooms of the Viper Lounge in real life. It was in the Viper Lounge, which is
yeah, notorious, because it's where River Phoenix spent his last evening.
That's where River Phoenix died over there. Johnny Depp sort of like regularly plays there with his band and all that. So the Viper Lounge, this is the place where there's a whole bunch of Hollywood stars. And so she ends up being in the back of this place running this high-stakes poker game where people are losing millions each night. And all Hollywood film stars come in there, and so she would work with them, and she just started earning loads of money from tips, and so she was like, oh, wait a second, and she built a career for herself running this high-stakes poker game, and she became known all over Hollywood as just being this person who would run this high-stakes poker game.
Wasn't it in New York? Didn't she move to New York?
She eventually did move to New York because of things that happened, and I feel like so the film essentially tells a story, and it tells a story of Molly Bloom, played by Jessica Chastain, who is amazing.
She's brilliant. She's brilliant. Everything.
Thanks. I love Jessica Chastain. I think she's a brilliant actress. Some of it might have to do that with the fact I just like looking at her face. And for me, I will maintain, it's a weird thing to say, but I will keep saying it, she has got the cutest chin in Hollywood. I love that chin. So it's played by Jessica Chastain, who is brilliant in the role. And it's couched like when you first meet her in the film, she's being raided by the FBI. And the FBI are like, you know, put your hands against the wall, all that kind of stuff. They burst in, wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, they take her in, and then she goes to meet a lawyer who's Idris Elba, a lawyer called Charlie Jaffe. And she's saying, I need somebody to represent me because I'm being accused for all these things, and I stopped running these things 2 years ago. Why are they coming over now? And through his eyes, you kind of go back, and she tells the story of how she built this whole thing up and how it started off with Hollywood film stars and all the kind of stuff and a bit of an expose. In the film, they're quite clever by not telling you, they don't give you any names. They don't give you any names of anybody. But in the book in which it's based, there are some people who are named, like Hollywood film stars who are named and all that. And it tells you how it goes from the Hollywood thing and to when she moves the game to New York, how it kind of gets involved with the Russian mafia and how... It's quite frankly, it's one of these crazy stories that if it wasn't true, you'd be like, oh yeah, well that's a bit far fetched.
And
yeah.
And that scene with the Russian mafia is pretty intense.
Ooh, excuse me.
that particular scene. Thinking it's real, quite realistic, I think.
That's the thing I think with the film. It has Aaron Sorkin's trademark thing of fast paced dialogue. Of essentially, I think Aaron Sorkin likes writing dialogue of people who are more intelligent than anybody in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all these people sat around trying to out-intelligence each other, if that's a word. Obviously, I'm not Aaron Sorkin. So I'm like, they're trying to out-intelligence each other with all these, and he does that, and you have all these scenes where it's back and forth. People are talking to each other and they're like firing this and how about this and da 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 da, and it's kind of like almost like a fencing match between two people. It's almost like it's like verbal dueling. But then you do have some scenes which are just so like, ooh, oh my god, because I feel in the scene that you're talking about where she sort of like where she she has like quite an intense encounter with the Russian mob in that scene that you're talking about. You feel the weight. You feel scared for her.
Scared, yeah. You feel scared.
And I think that's Jessica Chastain selling it. That's the whole thing. The whole way it's filmed, the way it's shot, and everything like that. And you're just kind of like, oh my! This just got bad. this just got bad. As opposed to everything else that has happened to her before, this has just gone bad. And so I really really like this film.
Yeah, me too.
I really like this film. I was watching it, enjoying it the whole way. I loved the bits where, like, Sean, I'm going to let you talk in a second.
That's okay. But, no, you carry on, Paige. You're doing a fine job. I'm quite happy sat here listening.
Yeah, but then is I love the bit where she's sort of like talking about the intricacies of building the game.
How do
you actually get a game like this going? How she tries to figure out, okay, what's illegal and what's am I doing this legally?
Because she wants to keep it right, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She doesn't want to sort of break too many rules or break any laws.
Yeah, the gambling laws are curious in America, aren't they? Because I know like a lot of Indian reservations, they have casinos on them because it's sort of... is outside of certain federal laws, so they have different...
That's right,
I know they've got to be a fine line between
because different states have different laws. Like Nevada is where Vegas, Reno, all those, that's just totally legal. And I think there's a few others. I think what's happened is that there's a place in Mississippi where I think because in the south there, you know, there's a lot of unemployment and it's very depressed. And I actually went to... Well, like supposed to be a mini Las Vegas once, which was in Mississippi, which was quite strange. So they've got these big casinos, big massive casinos, like doing Vegas, obviously not the same size. And we went for a drive, it was in a car, and we went for a drive, and as we went downtown, it was just like, wow, it was all run down. It was, the contrast between the places was like, whoa, we couldn't believe it, you know.
Also, like, they just done that sort of try and pump stuff into the economy.
Get some money into that economy. Get some money into,
I think there are different things that sort of cover different jurisdictions. I think in Molly's game, the whole idea is it's a private poker game. And so there's things about it because it's all about the license. So certain people in America are licensed to run gambling and licensed to run. So if you're licensed, then you can say, oh, all the money that comes through here, I'm allowed to take a certain amount of it because that's my commission. Yeah. But because she's organizing, private games, and she doesn't have a license to do it. She stays in this gray area of the law that as long as she doesn't take a cut, she's fine. As long as she doesn't take a cut, she's fine. And the crazy thing is because these people are such high rollers, all the money that she makes from it are from tips and people tipping her at the end of the day. And in 1 year, she made $4 million. That was from Tips. It tells you what these people are doing, and I think that there's a little bit of it that is a bit of an exploration of those sort of people who get to the point, who are the kind of people who say, you know what, $500,000. I want to bet $500,000. I'm going to lose that. Oh well, give me another $500,000. I want to play again. It's like, who are those sort of people? What was going on in that kind of world? And because it is mostly a men's world, as pretty much all the gamblers in this film are men.
They are.
It's about how does this woman succeed in the middle of all this men? And obviously, I mean, even if you think about it, you can think about some problems that will come up with there with sexism and all that kind of stuff. How did she navigate those and end up becoming essentially running what was the most successful or the most exclusive, most expensive private poker game, or pretty much empire? And for that, I think it's, I just think there's some bits of it that are a little bit like Goodfellas, that they're a little bit like Goodfellas, like the sort of rise and how she built everything. I love the intricacies of the bits where they're talking about how she put the game together and how she sort of tips this person and how she gets this barmaid to send her new people. And that's done in a very kind of like fast-paced Aaron Sorkin, oh, and we do this and we do that and we do that and we do that. And I think if you don't understand poker, I think there's some bits of the film that you'd be like, what just happened? What's going on? What's the river? What's the flop? What are you talking about?
If you know your Texas Hold'em, you're probably cope all right.
Yeah, if you know your
I actually like poker. I haven't played for a while actually, but yeah.
No, I didn't play for a while.
A couple of times in the States.
I used to be part of a regular poker game.
In Reno, I went to this competition at the Sun. It was called the Sundowner.
Yeah,
and I was sort of there for a week, and I played low stakes poker, and I played a bit. Like a bit dumb, really. Like I didn't know what I was doing, because even the dealer was saying, "Oh, you know." But it was quite nice because she actually took me out. So we went out that evening. But anyway, finally, I thought, well, they say, oh, there's that English bloke, and he doesn't really know what he's doing. And it was on the Saturday was the competition, but there was no one there I played against. They were all like totally different people, you know. So I was imagining, because the same people turned up during the week, thought, oh, they'd be the ones that are playing. So, but I did all right on that. I won, and we got a split pot at the end.
Oh, not bad.
And they used to have this thing called a bounty, which when you knocked a player out, if you knocked a player out, they gave you a load more chips. It was they called it a bounty. It was quite a good, you know, it wasn't a major competition, but it was a fun competition. And you had all the characters there, like your guy with the Stetson. Seriously, it was just like, you know.
It's a contractual obligation that at every poker table in America, there has to be a guy, a Texan, with a Stetson.
With a Stetson on.
I'm not so sure if he was. Yeah, he was a proper cowboy. But
probably called Tex.
I can't actually remember his name, but I just remember a really nice guy. Had one of those Yosemite Sam stoshes.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, seriously.
No way. Was it silver?
It was. Yeah, it was. It was a real proper Yosemite Sam,
All right, cool. Yeah, I think those scenes in the film with poker and everything, I think they if you understand a little bit about poker, there is quite a bit of tension in them. It really just sort of like tell you about the stakes of the people. I think the supporting characters, I mean Idris Elba, because he's really a supporting character.
Yeah.
He's really good in it.
He is good.
I think all the people who play Michael Cera plays, and he plays a character called, who's only known as Player X. They call him Player X because they're trying to protect the identity of the actual Hollywood star. Mm. But the truth is that if you go online, everybody knows that it was Tobey Maguire. Because Tobey Maguire and Leonardo DiCaprio frequented her games. And I think the fact that they don't even name them in this film, because that could be an easy way to sort of like bring people in, it tells you what they're focusing on. It's not about the celebrities who played at the table. It's about Molly.
Yeah,
this film is about Molly, and it's about what she did. The film is aptly known as Molly's Game. It's about it's kind of like Idris Elba spends a lot of the film, because he's a fictional character. He never existed, and he spends a lot of the film trying to figure out exactly what are you playing here? Why are you doing this? Why aren't you just making a deal with the government? Why aren't you just giving these people up? You said that there's all these people out there who own you $2.5 million. Why aren't you collecting the money? And he's trying to figure out what exactly her motivation is. Why is she doing the things this way? And I think like a lot of the best films of the scenes of the film, I think are the scenes where it's just Idris Elba and Jessica Chastain, and he's trying to figure her out and trying to figure out why are you doing this in a certain way. And I just think that those scenes are really, really good.
Did you ever see Miss Sloane?
I didn't see Miss Sloane. I didn't see Miss Sloane, but anytime Jessica Chastain gets a lead role, I want, apart from The Zookeeper's Wife, I do not want to see that.
I've seen that.
I don't know. That's just something about when they do a film.
It's a funny accent. I think it's the accent that tends to throw you a bit. It's like, oh, I know that's a fake accent.
Just, yeah, it sounds fake as well. Whenever they do a film that's set during World War II and it's supposed to be Germans, but it's like, you know, Americans
Polish,
and English people.
You think it's not. Yeah. You don't sound like
a and they're doing this accent and you're just like, just do it in the original language and subtitle it. I'll prefer that. There's something about that.
Or don't bother with the accents at all. Just do your own.
It's like Sweet Francais. That same issue. Sweet I had the Francais. Same issue with that film. But it's So, but anytime she gets a lead role, I am there.
I think you would like Miss Sloane because there's a thing in it where she's in court and that, and on about confidentiality. And there's a certain scene where they say, oh, did you know, were you involved? I won't put any spoilers in, but there's a scene in there much the same about confidentiality, you know. So it's worth it, but you really need to see, if you like this, you really need to see Miss Sloane.
Any close-ups of her chin?
Yeah, quite
cool.
A few.
Okay, I'm there.
try and catch it if you can, because it's a good movie.
Okay, cool. I was actually thinking that. I was like, I knew there was another film she carried. Like, oh, yeah, Miss Sloane, I need to go watch that. All right, cool. So just quickly, I haven't said all that because I love watching this film, and all the way through the film, I'm thinking this is a 4-star film all the way. My problem is I do not think that they stick the ending. I feel like the ending lets the film down. The final shot, I'm like, what? And there's this whole thing that they do where for the last 2 minutes of the film, they have this musical score in the background that just keeps building and building and building and building. And you're like, oh, for goodness sake, enough. Oh, you're ruining it. But I think it's a kind of story because Molly Bloom's still alive and her story is still, she's still working her way out of the hole that she got herself into. So there's kind of this thing like her story hasn't really ended, but the film needs a place to end, and the film doesn't really have a place to end. So they've kind of manufactured an ending, which Aaron Sorkin does a lot, which didn't really happen, but I feel it doesn't quite stick it. So I would go 3 out of 5, but a very high 3 because for a long part of its running time, it's a 4.
Well worth the 3. Touching a 4.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I would say that. Sean, any last words on Miss Sloane on just Molly's Game?
Be interesting to know any comments if anyone else out there has seen it and.
Let us know.
Yeah, what you think? Put it on the Facebook page.
Yeah, put it up on the Facebook page. All that kind of stuff. I mean,
because there must be people out there that probably don't agree or think it was
like, what are you talking about? I thought it was a bunch of rubbish.
That'd be interesting to know.
Didn't look like real poker players. Okay, all right, cool. We're gonna go for some ad breaks and then we're gonna be back to talk about
Three Billboards.
No, three. We're going to go 3 billboards, and then we're going to Greatest Showman last.
Okay.
All right.
We have a plan. Vectors Radio
104.6. For the people, by the people.
Welcome back to the Movie Review Show, and we are talking about... Oh, so we just finished talking about... what film was it?
Molly's Game.
Yeah, that film I said I liked.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, Molly. And now we are going to talk about a film that was described to me the other day as that film with a really long title. So this is probably going to have the film... It's probably going to be the longest title of 2018. And this is 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Indeed.
Now, this is a film that, Sean, you're the only one who's seen it.
I have, yep.
Because it was being shown as a special preview on Tuesday evening, and I forgot that it was a special preview and thought, oh, I'll just go see it tomorrow, and missed out on it. And so you get to tell us what this film's about, because I really want to see this film. But you go far away and tell us what this film's about.
Okay, basically, this film is about a lady whose daughter has been raped and killed, and they haven't found the killer, so she decides, you know, and she's sort of blaming the police, so she decides that what she's going to do is she sees these 3 billboards that have just sort of more or less been forgotten, so she goes into the town, into the advertising agency, and says, can you put up these posters, you know, and it says, sheriff, why haven't you found, you know, my daughter's killer, or this sort of thing. So there's three like billboards,
yeah.
And it causes a lot of publicity, and it causes a lot of animosity in the town between the townsfolk and especially the police. And basically, it's this story of, you know, the town and you've got all the your typical American town vicar and, you know, sheriff and deputies and,
yeah,
and the guy, the advertising guy, and your normal extras that going about. And the scenery's really nice, because I've been to Missouri, and it just sort of brought back memories, like some of the roads and things, how it was, the you know, scenery. So basically, that's the basic synopsis of the film. And there's some great, great characters in this film. And the thing I loved about it is there's a lot of twists of, like, you think, oh, yeah, this character's the one that's doing this, or this character's doing that.
Yeah.
And it's totally not. So there's lots and lots of great twists in this film. And it ends a bit ambiguously, but, yeah, a really, really good movie. Really, really enjoyed it. I like these type of movies, you know. I mean, it reminded me a lot of Hell and High Water.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I've gone on about so many times.
Yeah, good film.
Yeah.
Did you like that film?
I liked Hell and High Water, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that last year or the year before?
Year before, I think.
Okay, cool, yeah.
Chris Pine and...
26, yeah.
So Ben Foster.
Ben Foster. Yeah. I was going to say Ben something.
So it's in that sort of mould. The language in it is really, I mean, I think it must be an 18 certificate, I believe, because the language is like, it's great, especially with these, and there's like these media, the local TV station that are on one side, oh, this is great. And then when the townspeople come out against it, they say, oh, it's causing a lot of controversy, and they say it's all bad.
So when you say the language, you're talking about swearing. Like the swearing, yeah, and stuff.
A lot of super, effing and jeffing.
Yeah, and every other possible one you could think of, really.
Well, but the thing is, though, because this is written by Martin McDonagh and directed by him, was it McDonagh? I don't know, it's Irish name, I don't know. Help me out pronounce this thing. Matthew, I think it's Martin McDonagh,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's and he is the guy who wrote In Bruges. And if you remember that, I think language, because he and his brother, John Patrick McDonagh, I think, they're known for that. They kind of, I think they see a poetry in swearing.
Yeah.
And they find different ways of using it, in which it is kind of like, it's kind of poetic, and at the same time, it's very, very, very blue.
Very blue. Very, yes.
Yeah, and it's, so this is the guy who, the film is directed in Bruges, The Guard, Seven Psychopaths,
yep,
which I think is a brilliant film, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is the latest one. So those are the kind of things I would expect from him.
Yeah.
He doesn't do convention.
No, he doesn't do convention at all. But as I say, what's great about this movie is some of the things that happen, you're like, oh, I really didn't see that coming at all. You know,
yeah,
it's like, so everything comes in sort of left field, and so you got all these preconceptions about people which turn out not to be what you thought at the start, you know,
yeah,
like to do with racism and things. And, oh, yeah, well, he's a bit of a dodgy character. I wonder if he could be, there's something a bit fishy there. And then it all sort of turns on its head. And it's, wonderful performances, brilliant performances. And Woody Harrelson, I find him a bit hot and cold.
Yeah.
You know, bit like Idris Elba, really, like some good stuff and some, but in this he's really, really good. I really liked him in this. Not so sure about his wife. I can't remember who played his wife, but she was about the weakest part, I think, out of the actors. Oh, there's one great bit with the vicars around the house, and he goes, well, you know, we need to talk about these billboards and things. And she gives him a right mouthful about, well, I can't really say it, it's yeah, B2 Blue, yeah, and yeah, you know, and he's the vicar.
Yeah, because the main character is played by Frances McDormand. And my Frances McDormand, she's almost made a career out of playing, the way I was thinking is that she doesn't do glam.
No. Crotchety old.
Yeah, she just doesn't do glam. She does sort of almost down-to-earth, like, You might go for saying dowdy, but characters who don't really care.
Don't care. That's it.
She does.
They sort of do, but they, you know, deep down they care.
Yeah.
But
yeah, deep down they care. But on the level, the thing is, like, they care about something, and they don't care about what people think, as long as they're going to get what they. Because I mean, pretty much her big starring role was Fargo.
Yeah,
in the Coen Brothers Fargo, in which she plays, she's pregnant through the whole film, and she's walking on trying to find this killer and all that good. But she's very, all she cares about is the truth in that, and I feel like she has this, like, when you say Frances McDormand is heading up the film, you know, you're expecting a certain kind of like
character.
It's going to be a bit hard. It's going to be a bit, it's like, you know, almost of, it's a weird term, but salt of the earth kind of thing. And it's like, where it's just kind of like, okay, this is what I care about. This is what I'm going to be going for. And I don't care about anything else.
Peter Dinklage is in this as well. He plays an interesting character as well, because he's got a bit of a crush on, like you were saying about. So that's quite amusing, really. So because he really likes her, and yet she's real crotchety, dowdy, you know.
That's our Frances.
That's our Frances.
Frances McDormand. I think she's I really, really rate her.
Yeah.
I think she's a brilliant actress.
Yeah. What other things has she been in? I know.
Well, I'm trying to think. Was she in Hail Caesar? Was she like a film editor with the cigarette hanging out the side of the house?
She was.
Cutting all the film up.
Because she's married to one of the Coen brothers.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's married to one. So she sort of pops up every now and then in Coen brothers movies. But I think she sort of pops up here and there. I know she was in an HBO adaptation of, it wasn't Mildred Pierce, it was another one.
Oh, I know the one you mean.
Yeah, it was one of these literary adaptations. Okay, I'm going to go through. Coen Brothers, Raising Arizona, Mississippi Burning. But I think from Fargo, because I feel like Fargo really was the film that everybody sort of started paying attention to her in. Let's see, Primal Fear, Lone Star, not really big. Oh, she was in Almost Famous.
Oh, right, okay.
She was the mother in Almost Famous, which is the Cameron Crowe movie, which was based on his,
as a roadie, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was an underage reporter, because Rolling Stone, back in the day when he didn't have like social network or anything like that, they didn't realize he was underage, and so they sent him to go track this rock band across the United States. And it was a film that he made about his and she was a mother in that. She was really good. She tends not to play not to be in high profile stuff, so she won't be in blockbusters. I honestly can't think of a blockbuster Frances McDormand has been in. She'll be a more independent sort of fare. Like, I saw this film the other day called Friends with Money, which I think it stars her and Jennifer Aniston, and that's probably the closest she's ever been to doing something that's going to be big and all that. Sorry, I just read through a thing. Just realized she was in Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Okay.
Frances, how could you?
I can't remember her in that.
How could you? Oh my God! Oh,
just forget you saw that. Blanket, go fuzzy eyed for that. Everybody, and scroll past it.
Everybody needs money. Everybody needs money. I should not hold that against somebody for trying to make money by being in a trust.
She might have done it for
movie.
A bet.
Oh, maybe.
But what's his name? Sir somebody. He was in one of the Transformers movies, wasn't he?
Anthony Hopkins.
So, I mean,
but
she's in good company.
He's had
he
a
does
long,
go slumming, though, every now and then.
Yeah, he has a long track record of just taking the check.
Yeah, for sure. I think there was a, this is going back years now, there was a Barclays Bank advert where he's in the back of a car, and he's saying about that, and he goes, and the paycheck. Yeah, substantial.
Because he's talking about big. He's like, you know, how big means something in this world. He's like,
that's it.
Every day when my girlfriend puts on a dress, she asks me, does my bum look big in this?
Yeah.
Big means something. And my paycheck for this advert? It's substantial. He makes fun of it himself and all that. Frances McDormand, she was the voice of the French captain who was chasing the animals around in Madagascar 3.
Wow.
Yeah, that she's really funny in that. Really, really funny in that. So, great actress.
Really good.
She's won at least one Oscar for Fargo. And for her, I think when you say that and her with Martin McDonagh being together, and the fact that this film has one of my actors who he's usually never the lead character, but he's somewhere in the background, and he's like, you know, it's going to be a good fun time when he's around. Sam Rockwell is in this film. I'm like, this film is ticking a lot of boxes.
Yeah, that's right. He was in Seven Psychopaths as well.
He was brilliant in Seven Psychopaths. I think he might have been about four of them. He was brilliant to Seven Psychopaths. By the same director and all that. So I think whenever he does stuff on stage, you can expect stuff to be a bit visceral, a bit sort of like real, a bit kind of like a gut punch. I think the guy is good. I think the guy's really, really good.
He's good in most things.
Essentially, this film is a film that I think I'm probably most looking forward to.
It'll be really interesting to see what you think. What about you, Sharon?
I haven't seen it, but I'm intrigued by it. But I have seen the trailer for it. I think, it looks good. But I'm not very good on the whole effing and jeffing in films. I tend to have a bit more of a my inner winceometer tends to go into the red, and I shut off a little bit.
But if people moan about the effing and jeffing, there's a few other words in there that.
I think once you get anaesthetised to it, you think, okay, just get on with the film. But sometimes I think, I just can't get past it.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, I don't mind it myself. I mean, the best one for language is Tarantino, isn't it? Well, really?
Yeah, they can be a little bit.
I think for me, when it comes to that in a film, it's about whether it's believable, as in these characters would be people who just speak like that. As opposed to whether it's being done to try and make people look cool.
Yeah.
The problem I found with Tarantino is that sometimes he just uses it to try and make characters look cool.
Look cool, yeah. No, I agree on that.
But there are some when I look at it and I go, now, I believe that character would talk like that. And when you get to that point where you think, I believe that character would talk like that.
That's it.
Then I think, I know people in real life who do speak like that.
Yeah.
I personally don't like it, but that's the way people speak.
Yeah, there's certain people that talk that way. And I think, depending on the company you're in, you know when you can use it and when you can't.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, for instance, we can't use any of those words
right now.
We can't
use any of those
because
words.
We're on FM.
and that does not stand for... Any of the things you think it might.
We are responsible broadcasters here at Vectus Radio, so we are not going to use any of those words because we know what company we're in. So, Sean, how many stars would you give Three Billboards?
Four. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm happy about that. I was hoping it was going to be good. I was really, really hoping it was going to be good. All right, cool. Olive Kitteridge. That's the one.
Yes.
That's the
Olive Kitteridge.
That's the one she was in. Okay, cool. All right, now we're going to go for some adverts, and we're going to be back to talk about The Greatest Showman.
Vectus Radio. 104.6. The heart of the island's community.
And we are back on the movie review show. And now, Sharon, it is your moment. Your moment to shine. Which I think might be a bit of a theme of this film. Now, we spoke about this briefly last week.
We did.
Yeah, with The Greatest Showman, because Sean had seen it, but none of us had. And every now and then on this show, especially when we have when Hollywood and the cinemas have done us a favor and not released anything major, we get a chance to see when somebody says something about a film, and another one of us gets to go watch the film, and we see if we agree.
Yes.
And so, Sharon, you got to see The Greatest Showman.
The Greatest Showman. I went to see it last night with some pals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I liked it. I know one of your criticisms was you thought the songs were a little bit samey by the end.
Yeah.
About that. I could hear, I know what you meant.
Yeah.
Because some of them, you have like a sort of refrain that sort of repeats a little bit.
Yep.
But no, I didn't mind that, because I think when you look back, harking back to sort of days of yore, it reminded me a little bit of Robert Preston in The Music Man.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of, you know, the big showman. The big, you know, and I think when you look back at those sort of musicals, they were very samey musically-wise, speaking as well. But it reminded me of that sort of spectacle. It was a proper, this is Hugh Jackman's film.
Yeah.
And you get in front of him at your peril. You'll get swiped with a stain, or you'll get hit with a top hat. But, you know, it's his film.
It's like, the scenery, I must chew.
But it is basically, I think you explained last time, Shawnee, when you talked about it, Hugh Jackman plays P.T. Barnum,
mm-hmm.
who we know from, like, Michael Crawford did a musical Barnum in the 80s.
It keeps coming back every now and then
it becomes popular again. But he basically was someone who basically made an art form out of the freak show, the carnival and the freak show. He made it into like an art form, and he made it into like big business, an entertainment business.
Yeah.
But this film sort of puts a nicer spin on it. Basically, he's drawing out the unique people, as he calls them, and bringing them into the forefront, and not just laughing at them, but sort of celebrating them and their differences, and saying that, you know, that we're different, but we're still the same.
Yep.
You know, because we still love, we laugh, we feel pain.
Yeah.
And we come together to enjoy life together, but through whatever gifts we have, whether it's music or dance or through our physical appearances.
Yeah.
So it's, in some ways it's like a celebration of all things different.
Yep.
Set to music. So I rather liked that, the theme of it, you know, about this celebration of life in all its forms and all its shades and all its, you know, oddities. So it sort of took that and just turned it up to 11.
You know, because I'm not gonna lie, this film looks like it's right up my alley. I'm a musical fan, and the spectacle of this film, it really looks like what you said. It looks like they've dialed it back to sort of like an old school 1950s MGM musical, and they just giving it like an HD polish.
Yeah,
and some of the circus scenes do look like one of those, ooh, what are they called? Like, was it Siegfried Follies or something like that?
Like, where you and have like The Greatest Show on Earth, we had like John Wayne. Was it John Wayne in The Greatest
Charlton
Show?
Heston.
Charlton Heston. Heston.
Yes.
John Wayne did a circus film as well, though, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He did. That will come to me later.
The name The Big Top is coming to me,
yes.
But
there was a whole raft of them. There was like a series of them in the 50s,
mid 50s.
Trapeze
with Burt Lancaster. Burt Lancaster, yeah. There's a whole lot of them.
And it's that sort of
the circus.
You know, the heightened colours.
Yeah.
All the clothes are. They're the right cut and they're the right style, but they're like these really vibrant colours.
Yeah.
So they're like all they're lilac and fuchsia and, you know, sky blue and pink.
Yeah.
And his coat is like reddest of reds, and, you know, it's everything is like heightened.
Yeah.
And so you get the feeling that this is, you know, not if you walked into New York of 1840 whatever, this is not the New York that you would be seeing. This is like a heightened version of
it.
So you know that it isn't entirely
heightened, probably slightly Disneyfied version of it.
Yeah. But no, I thought it was enjoyable. My only criticism was I felt you were introduced to some of these characters and then they didn't do anything with them.
That is a really, really good point when you think about it, because they're not really, you know, you find these characters and you're right, they're just there for the musical numbers.
They're in the background, they're singing and dancing, but you don't find out a single thing about them. There's a couple you do, like the bearded lady, you get a little bit more about her because she tends to be front and centre.
And the general.
Tom Thumb. But there's like the dog boy, or whatever they call him. You introduce him, I said, hey, they just call me the dog man. That's it. He never says another word in the whole film. Yeah. And the tattooed guy, he was like, you know, I'm tattooed all over. That's it. He never says another word. And there's some of the other characters, you're intrigued by them. Your eyes catch them because they just look extraordinary.
Yeah.
But they don't have any screen time of their own. They're just like dancing by, sort of like da 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 da.
A bit like those two in Pitch Perfect, eh?
Yeah. But when because sometimes your eyes were going to the background thinking, who's that? And I want to know more about them.
Yeah.
And who's that? And but there's never beyond the. You get the main characters focus on is definitely Hugh Jackman.
It's a Hugh Jackman.
And his relationship with his wife, played by Michelle Williams. And then he sort of brings in this like straight man, his partner, Zac Efron.
Oh, yeah.
He's like more of like a businessman who's high society. He's a playwright.
Yep.
So he brings him in to sort of bring a bit more class and a bit more stability to the theatre.
Yep.
And then he has a relationship with one of the trapeze artists.
Played by Zendaya.
Who I don't know.
No, I don't know.
And so they're the only ones really who have any screen time. Zendaya's brother on screen, he has a little bit more presence than the others, but nearly all the others are just pop up and sing or pop up and dance.
Yeah.
So I just feel a little bit like I wish I'd known more about, that they'd fleshed out some of these other characters a little bit more. Because you just feel that you lose out.
I totally agree with you on that, actually, to be fair. That is a really, really good point. Because they don't, do they, really?
No, they just skip about a bit and then they're gone. But for all that, you know, the musical numbers are great. You're just drawn in and you just it's a whale of a time. It's a good fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good fun film that I could have. But I'll probably have to see it again, I think, because I feel like I missed... quite a lot of detail, because when you first watch it, you just got overwhelmed by the spectacle and you're just listening to the songs and then, like with most musicals, the songs progress the story.
Oh.
And some of the songs, you think, if I'd listened to that song a bit more attentively, it would have told me what happens next.
Well, it would have explained something and something else that happens in the film.
Or it would sort of like foreshadows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and some of the, looking back, I think, yeah, that song basically was about that. And that song was about that. But it happens later. Yeah. So it is a, they have thought about the songs, not just as like, hey, tiddly-dee, I'm just going to dance about a bit. It's, they want to use the music and the songs to progress the
that
the sound, drama.
That tiddly-dum, diddly-dee reminded me of Hopperty, which was a TV program like, I used to watch as a kid. Dear old Hopperty, naughty Hopperty, he sings tiddly-dum.
That sounds all right. Yeah. But no, so no, I would...
But anyone who remembers that.
Did it star Hugh Jackman?
It did
but
not.
I enjoyed Adventure. I'd give it a 4.
Okay, 4. Sean, you said 3.
I said 3, yep.
Yep. Cool, okay, cool. Not bad, not bad. Because I think it is something that's like right up my... I watched this film and I just think, yes, I think I will enjoy this.
Yeah, I had a conversation about with the sixth former today about, because she thought it was absolutely marvellous. And I mean, I said, yeah, I thought it was okay. You know, I didn't think it was any great shakes. I didn't. And I picked her up again a bit later, or she got on a little bit later, and she said, I've got issues with you. I want to know why you didn't. Enter. So it's quite interesting. So I had to explain it, and then we spoke about other musicals. You know, the musical I liked. And have you got a favourite musical?
Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, Singing in the Rain.
Movie musical, Singing in the Rain, hands down.
Mine's West Side Story.
I do like that. I'd probably say something like Seven Brides.
Seven Brides. Yeah, you've always gone on about Seven Brides.
Yeah.
Bless your beautiful height.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that song. Bless your beautiful height, wherever you may be. This song is a bit sexist, but we will move on right now. That whole show is a bit sexist, but it's
funny. Well, it totally is, but I love it.
It's but I'm so glad we have you here to say that. We would be in trouble.
Yeah, we would be otherwise.
All right, cool. So this is the end of the show. We're going to finish the show this week by playing a song from The Greatest Showman, which is that's a weird noise, but never mind. We're going to play a song from The Greatest Showman, which shows up in the trailer. And this is a song that I think, like, each time I hear it, I've seen the trailer loads, but I have to admit, it gives me goosebumps. It kind of tells you about the message you were talking about with the film and everything that it does. Yeah. But thank you so much for joining us for the first show of 2018. Join us next week when we're going to be looking forward into 2018, and we're going to talk a little bit about films coming up and the films that we are really, really looking forward to. So feel free to get onto the Vectis Radio Facebook page and tell us what films you are looking forward to in 2018. But for now, this is me from The Greatest Showman soundtrack, sung by Keala Settle, who plays the bearded lady.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the island's local station.